So Daniel chapter 7, Daniel's dream of four beasts. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream, and visions passed through his mind as he was lying on his bed. He wrote down the substance of his dream. Daniel said, "In my vision at night I looked, and there before me were the four winds of heaven churning up the great sea. Four great beasts, each different from the others, came up out of the sea. The first was like a lion, and it had the wings of an eagle. I watched until its wings were torn off, and it was lifted from the ground, so that it stood on 2 feet like a man, and the heart of a man was given to it. And there before me was a second beast, which looked like a bear. It was raised up on one of its sides, and it had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. It was told, 'Get up and eat your fill of flesh.' After that I looked, and there before me was another beast, one that looked like a leopard. And on its back it had 4 wings like those of a bird. This beast had 4 heads, and it was given authority to rule. After that in my vision at night I looked, and there before me was a 4th beast, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. It had large iron teeth. It crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. It was different from the former beasts, and it had 10 horns. And while I was thinking about the horns, there before me was another horn, a little one, which came up among them. And 3 of the 1st horns were uprooted before it. This horn had eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth that spoke boastfully. As I looked, thrones were set in place, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was as white as snow. The hair of his head was as white like wool. His throne was flaming with fire, and its wheels were all ablaze. A river of fire was flowing, coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands attended him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated, and the books were opened. Then I continued to watch because of the boastful words the horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain and its body destroyed and thrown into the blazing fire. The other beasts had been stripped of their authority, but were allowed to live for a period of time. And in my vision at night I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All peoples, nations, and men of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. I, Daniel, was troubled in spirit, and the visions that passed through my mind disturbed me. I approached one of those standing there and asked them the true meaning of all this. So he told me and gave me the interpretation of these things. The 4 great beasts are 4 kingdoms that will rise from the earth. But the saints of the Most High will receive the kingdom and will possess it forever. Yes, forever and ever. Then I wanted to know the true meaning of the 4th beast, which was very different from all the others and most terrifying, with its iron teeth and bronze claws. The beast that crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. I also wanted to know about the 10 horns on its head and about the other horn that came up, before which 3 of them fell, the horn that looked more imposing than the others and that had eyes and a mouth that spoke boastfully. As I watched, this horn was waging war against the saints and defeating them, until the Ancient of Days came and pronounced judgment in favour of the saints of the Most High. And time came when they possessed the kingdom. He gave me this explanation. The fourth beast is a fourth kingdom that will appear on earth. It will be different from the other kingdoms, and it will devour the whole earth, trampling it down and crushing it. The ten horns are ten kings who will come from this kingdom. After them, another king will arise, different from the earlier ones. He will subdue the three kings. He will speak against the Most High and oppress his saints, and try to change the set times and laws. The saints will be handed over to him for a time, times, and half a time. But the court will sit, and his power will be taken away and completely destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty, power, and greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven will be handed over to the saints, the people of the Most High. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all rulers will worship and obey him. This is the end of the matter. I, Daniel, was deeply troubled by my thoughts, and my face turned pale, but I kept the matter to myself.
Do you like monsters? We're rather keen on monsters in our culture. Think of Animal in The Muppets. Think of Monsters, Inc. When I was growing up, there was a program on telly called Rainbow. And there was a great big bear on the set called Bungle. Remember him? And a sort of rugby ball-shaped character called Zippy, who could be zipped up when he became too annoying. And there was a slightly camp, pink hippopotamus called George. That's what we do with monsters. We make them friendly. If you actually met a large brown bear, or even a pink hippo, you would be quite frightened. Well, this evening, I want to introduce you to a collection of monsters. But they're not the cuddly kind. This is the second half of the book of Daniel. Daniel has been introduced to us as a great man. He's a Jew, one of God's people, living in Babylon, because God's people have been carried into exile there. And Daniel and his three wonderful friends live consistently for God in an alien land. Just as we have to live for Jesus in a land which rejects him. Daniel and his friends will not break the Old Testament food laws. His friends would rather face the fiery furnace than worship a false god. And Daniel is extraordinarily gifted by God to interpret dreams and visions. He eventually leads the evil king Nebuchadnezzar to faith in God by interpreting his dream. He pronounces judgment on the evil king Belshazzar by interpreting his dream. And most famously, Daniel would rather face the lion's den than give up on praying to the one true God. And God preserves his life in the lion's den. Now today, Daniel himself has a dream. And he sees the monsters, and he sees the Messiah. And those are my two headings, the monsters and the Messiah. Firstly then, the monsters. Now in verse 1, we rewind the tape. This is a prequel to chapter 5. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream, and Daniel is disturbed. Visions pass through his mind. So he writes it down, verse 2. In my dream, in my vision at night, I looked, and there before me with the four winds of heaven, churning up the great sea. This is a traditional Jewish view of chaos. We like to sing, "Oh, I do like to be beside the seaside." But the sea in the Bible represents danger and chaos. Well, verse 3, four beasts, four monsters come up out of the sea. If you were watching Doctor Who now, you would definitely be behind the sofa at this point. Verse 4, the first beast was like a lion, and it had the wings of an eagle. The wings are torn off. It is lifted off the ground. It now stands on 2 feet like a man, and the heart of a man is given to it. This beast represents King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. He was a mighty king. Then he became like an animal. Then he was restored to being a man when he put his faith in God. Then verse 5, a second beast, this time like a bear. It is raised up on one of its sides. It has 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. It's told, "Get up and eat your fill of flesh." Many Bible teachers think that the bear being raised on one side represents the unequal power of the Medo-Persian Empire. This empire took over from the Babylonians as the superpower of the day. The Persians had conquered the Medes, so they were more powerful. The mouthful of ribs represents all the peoples the Medo-Persians swallowed up: Babylon, Lydia, Egypt. The third beast in verse 6 looks like a leopard. On its back it has 4 wings, it has 4 heads, and is given authority to rule. So this beast is ferocious and it's fast. If this was a game of top trumps, this would be a top card. Fast and scary. This beast represents Alexander the Great, the emperor of the Greek Empire, which came after the Persians. Then verse 7, Daniel sees a fourth beast, terrifying and powerful. It has large iron teeth. This is the Luis Suarez of the ancient world. This is the Roman Empire. Do you like the dentist? There was great news the other day. They're going to do away with fillings and drills. Did you hear that? Read that in the paper? It's true. My teeth are a bit like this creature. They're not quite made of iron, but they are full of metal. Too many sweets makes your teeth scary. But not as scary as this creature. It has large iron teeth. It crushes its victims, tramples them underfoot. It has 10 horns. In other words, it is very, very powerful. You wouldn't want to be on the wrong end of a rhino horn. You certainly wouldn't want 10 horns inserted in any portions of your anatomy. And then, verse 8, while Daniel is thinking about the horns, he sees another horn. A little one. Oh, I don't think so. It comes among the horns. And 3 of the first horns are uprooted before it. It has eyes like a man and a mouth, and it speaks boastfully. The little horn probably represents Antiochus Epiphanes IV, who was king of the Seleucid Empire, which was between the Greeks and the Romans. he was extremely evil, and he tried to stamp out the worship of God. Among other things, he dedicated the Jerusalem temple to Zeus and sacrificed a pig on the altar, thus making the temple unclean. Now, I want you to jump into chapter 8, verse 1. It's now the third year of Belshazzar's reign. This time, Daniel sees himself in Susa, a major city in the Persian Empire, modern-day Iran. And verse 3, he sees a ram with two horns, and the horns were long. One of the horns was longer than the other, but grew up later. Two horns represent the Medes and the Persians. Verse 4, the ram charges to the west, the north and the south, and no animal can stand against him. The Medo-Persians are unstoppable. Suddenly, verse 5, a goat with a prominent horn between his eyes, coming from the west, crossing the whole earth without touching the ground. Verse 6, he comes toward the two-horned ram and charges at him in great rage. This is Alexander the Great of Greece. He shatters the two horns. Verse 7, the goat knocks the ram to the ground. No one can rescue the ram. Verse 8, the goat becomes very great. But at the height of his powers, his large horn is broken off, and in its place, four prominent horns grow up. Verse 9, out of one of them comes another horn, which starts small but grows in power to the south and the east, and toward the beautiful land, which is Israel. Verse 10, the horn grows and grows. Then God gives the interpretation of the dream. Verse 20, the two-horned ram is the Medo-Persian Empire. Verse 21, the goat is the king of Greece, Alexander the Great. Verse 22, the four horns that come next are the four kingdoms that come out of the Greek Empire. Verse 23, the little horn of verse 9 is Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth, who did such evil. Now, there are our monsters. Are you feeling frightened? No, clearly not. Well, after the monsters, let me show you the Messiah. Does anyone know who John Knott was? Put your hand up if you know who John Knott was. Anybody at all? Tony? It may have been a cricketer called John Knott, but that's not the John Knott I'm thinking of. Okay. John Knott was Defence Secretary in 1982 during the Falklands War. And John Knott is known, or perhaps not known, for an interview he gave with Robin Day. Robin Day was the Jeremy Paxman of his day. My grandfather actually punched Robin Day on the nose. My grandfather was a left-wing atheist, and he got into a debate with Robin Day in a restaurant. And when Robin Day ran rings round him, intellectually, he just punched him on the nose. Anyway, John Knott gave an interview with Robin Day, during which Robin Day described John Knott as a here-today, gone-tomorrow politician. At which point, Mr. Knott, who was already wound up by the interview, didn't punch him on the nose, but he just pulled off his microphone and stormed out of the studio. He didn't like being described as here today, gone tomorrow. But how many of us remember him? That's the great point of Daniel 7 and 8. How many had heard of Alexander the Great before this evening, out of interest? Fair few. What about Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth? Fewer, but fair few. Well, it says, John Ellerton said, Earth's proud empires pass away. That's the message of these chapters. There have been many monsters in history. Hitler, Stalin, Pol Pot, as well as the monsters we've thought about this evening. 1 John 2:18 says, there have been many antichrists, many great leaders who have set themselves up in opposition to God. Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth was an antichrist. In 2 Thessalonians 2, the Apostle Paul speaks of the man of lawlessness, the final antichrist who will lead a world rebellion against King Jesus before Jesus returns. But the great message of these chapters is that all such leaders will ultimately come to nothing. And the Messiah shall reign. The Messiah is God's chosen rescuer king. He is Jesus. Come back with me to Daniel's first dream, chapter 7, verse 9. Daniel looks and he sees the Ancient of Days taking his seat. He sees God. While power passes from one empire to another, God reigns. God reigns on his throne, constant, immovable, sovereign. His clothing was as white as snow. He is blazingly holy, pure. The hair of his head was white like wool. His throne was flaming with fire. Its wheels were all ablaze. This is the fire of judgment all the unforgiven will experience. Verse 10, a river of fire was flowing out before him. Thousands upon thousands attend him. Our politicians have their little gaggles of special advisers. It said Theresa May didn't know which pair of kitten heels to wear without the advice of Fiona Cunningham, who had to resign the other week. There is a pettiness to human government, but our God is attended by thousands upon thousands. 10,000 times 10,000 stand before him. And the books are opened. This is the judgment. All of us will stand before God and our lives will be judged. We will go to heaven or to hell. How wonderful then, chapter 7, verse 13, that Daniel sees one like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approaches the Ancient of Days and is led into his presence. You will know, probably, that Jesus consistently describes himself as the Son of Man. And in Jesus' trial, in Mark 14, 61 and 62, the high priest asks Jesus, "Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One?" Jesus says, "I am." And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of God and coming on the clouds of heaven. Jesus directly applies these verses to himself. He is saying that he is God and that he will come again to earth on the clouds. 7:14. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All peoples, nations, and men of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. Here today, gone tomorrow, not our Jesus. Verse 18, we will reign with him. You see that? The saints of the Most High will receive the kingdom and possess it forever. Yes, forever and ever. Jesus will return. This world will be renewed, reborn as a perfect world, and we will govern it with Jesus. Verse 21, God will find in favor of the persecuted saints. Where Christians face monsters, where Christians are persecuted in Babylon, in Persia, in Nigeria, in North Korea, in China, and so on, God will find in their favor. God will reward them. So I must ask you, are you right with this God? Is the sovereign of the universe your king? Have you given your life to him? Are you serving him? Because either we serve him now and enjoy his blessing for all eternity, or we reject him now, we serve other gods, and we are separated from him, cast into hell on the day of judgment. And what have you done with Jesus, this Son of Man, to whom is given all authority and sovereignty? What have you done with him? The amazing thing about Jesus, or one of the many amazing things about Jesus, is that although he is the sovereign of the universe, he stooped to become one of us, to live a perfect life, to die on the cross in our place, taking the punishment for our rebellion against God. We can be forgiven. We can be right with God. We can know that we're going to heaven if we will accept that Jesus died for our sin and that he is the way to heaven. So don't be scared of the monsters of history. Don't be scared of the monsters you face. Put your trust in Jesus. Allow him to be your king, your Lord, and your Savior. Father, how we thank you that you are the King of the universe. How we thank you that you are sovereign, in control of all of the monsters of history. And thank you for Jesus. Thank you that he is your king. Thank you that he died to save us. So grant us all, Lord, to make Jesus our king. Trust him to be our Savior, to live lives wholeheartedly devoted to loving him and pleasing him and sharing him. And grant us, Lord, not to fear any monsters. Grant us to fear you alone and to know your great love for us. So we commit ourselves to you now.